OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, you're welcome back. A reminder again, Jordy Murphy is with us after 8 o'clock. In the meantime, golf is one of the sports that is starting to reawaken. On June the 11th, the PGA Tour will resume, pretty much locked and loaded, minus the fans, but it will resume as we know it. And last weekend, we had a skins game for charity. It was DJ and Rory McIlroy against Matthew Wolff and Ricky Fowler. And this weekend, we have Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson once again taking to the fairways with cameras, mic'd up, plus Peyton Manning and Tom Brady for company as well. We'll chart the Woods-Mickelson rivalry over the decades in a moment, but first, let's get a sense of what our next guest, Lawrence Donegan, made of the skins game at the weekend just gone. It was the first bit of live televised golf that we have seen in some time. Lawrence, before we fully get into that, I feel like I should almost genuflect here. McKellar podcast, always a stellar listen. For a long time, I've enjoyed the two grumpy men is what we're talking about here. You and Huggy, writing the world bit by bit, story by story. But during this COVID crisis, we've had Pete Cowan. We've had Lee Westwood, and then you went and caused all kinds of trouble last week with Rory McIlroy. You are intervening in the running of the country, for God's sake.
That was quite funny. Yeah, it was quite surreal. We were watching the Skins game on Sunday, and Mike Tirico, the host for NBC, asked Trump a question that he didn't actually mention about the podcast, but a question derived from Rory's appearance on the podcast. What was quite interesting to me was that Trump skirted the opportunity to have a go at Rory. And that chat, because there's a pal of mine who works at a newspaper in New York, and he's known Trump for years, and we were chatting. And I said to him, do you think Trump will tweet out at Rory? And he said, there's no chance he will do that because he's such a jock sniffer, which means a kind of sports fan. That's an American term for sports fan. He will not want to fall out with Rory. And lo and behold, he very skillfully dodged the chance to have a go back at Rory in the midst of making what was essentially a party political broadcast in the middle of the whole thing. So there you go. That was a little bit of insight into the mind of Donald Trump.
Yes, I'm not sure if the Bill Murray interview was more bizarre than the Trump one, but they both happened in the midst of this broadcast. I really enjoyed the McIlroy interview. And on Trump, if people hadn't seen it, I think most people have now. I mean, it went global. But you asked him, and I was wondering all the way through, is Donegan going to ask him here, would he play with Trump again? And I thought McIlroy's answer was very good. Like, he talked about still finding the Trump he played with perfectly personable and likable and courteous. But then he went on to say that the fact he's trying to politicize the COVID situation, turn it into a campaign rally, talk about it like it's a contest with the rest of the world. He said there's some stuff that is just terrible. It's not the way a leader should act. And he said he probably, on balance, wouldn't choose to play with him again. I don't think he would have brought it up if you went and asked him. But that's what Rory said. And if people hadn't seen it, and then, you know, Trump didn't ultimately respond. But on the whole, McIlroy came across incredibly well. You know, he really has grown up in front of us and made all his mistakes in front of us over the course of well over a decade. And now, as he hits his 30s, he's becoming just an incredibly impressive character.
Yeah, and again, not to go on about the podcast, but the our podcast is really a golf nerd podcast. It's really, I mean, I said it to him during the broadcast that we're not in the business. Our motto is we try and make as little news as possible, and I think that's why I'm sure he gets appeals to go on all sorts of things. But he actually reached out to us, and I think the reason was he knew it was going to be a golf nerd discussion, and I think. If you look at the overall McIlroy brand, and I think that that's a slight thing that niggles at him, that I don't think people realise how much of a golf nerd he really, really is. And it was fascinating. And it was fascinating mainly because it was on subjects that he's never really been asked about in depth before. And my goodness, some of his opinions were so nuanced and so self-critical is too putting it too strong, too strongly. But he really was. He was prepared to own up, you know, say, for instance, on, again, this is probably not quite boring for your general audience, Joe, but, you know, golf course architecture. I used to go, he would say, I'll go to a golf course and I just think, oh, this looks pretty, so therefore I like it. But it's, you know, I think he wanted to show a side of himself that the world wasn't aware of, that he really is somebody who is interested in the nuances of golf. He is this global sporting icon, but he's at his heart, he's just a guy who loves golf.
Yeah. And loves the history of golf and thinks it's really cool when he gets to see Ben Hogan's US Open medal, all of that stuff.
And, you know, you're like me, Joe. We've grown up with McIlroy, and I've seen him over the last 10, 12 years where he, sometimes you think, God, does this guy really like golf? He spoke again about the 2013 Open Championship at Muirfield and just how much he was just done with it, so fed up with his life, fed up with golf. And you just wonder, because you hear all these stories about these young proteges, these teen superstars, they get it all when they're young and they eventually burn out. And there has been times over the last 10 years where I thought, oh my goodness, McIlroy's is going to burn out. He's just going to, the toys are out the pram. He's just going to fade away. But what you get now at this age, at this stage of his life, you just kind of realize that his love for golf has actually broadened and deepened. Talking to him, it was spine-tingling sometimes. Because I'm a guy who's utterly steeped in the game. I love every single aspect of it. And it was just amazing to think that the world's number one kind of feels the same way as the rest of us guys, you know, going out and just chopping it around. But we kind of love it. And, you know, and that way it was kind of, as you say, he is kind of growing up and maturing, and his opinions are maturing. Actually, even just the way he speaks, Joe, it was so articulate. Yeah. This is a guy who left school at 16, but essentially didn't go to school from the age of 14. I mean, he kind of went, but it was he was away a lot, and you know, he's so well read and he's so articulate. It was, as I say, it was kind of spine tingling, really.
Yeah, no, it was great. I hadn't realised he reached out to you. That's even more interesting in itself.
Yeah.
So the Skins game on TV, it was on NBC, it was on Sky Sports, notable because it is the first foray back into live golf. These things are tricky. Like, we found that out with the Mickelson-Woods match, as it was called, a while back. They, you know, you mic these guys up. They happen to be very good at sport. It doesn't make them all phenomenally interesting people or that the conversation is going to be scintillating. And, you know, they're throwing in interviews with Bill Murray and the president. It was very easy to criticise. It was okay. It wasn't as bad, I would have thought, as people are making out. People are talking about it as if it was one of the most worst things they had ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think that. They had technical limitations. I think they only had 6 cameras. It just goes to show you a normal broadcast how much more broad and deep the coverage is. You know, they have 6 TV cameras in total on the premises. And I think there was a kitchen sink mentality thing. You know, we've got to get Bill Murray in, we've got to get Trump in, we've got to get X, Y, and Z in. It was a TV spectacle. It was a bit of a mess. It was quite flat. But, you know, the race, that's just why I don't get the criticism. I mean, the race, what, $5, $6 million? I mean, they didn't offend anybody. You know, they didn't offend, the layperson or a kind of golf fanatic. I actually thought it was quite good. But again, I'm a golf nerd. I was really interested in seeing that golf course, Seminole. It's quite a legendary golf course in the States. You know, Ben Hogan used to practice here when he was preparing for the Masters. It's a very, very exclusive place. If you go on YouTube, you can see all sorts of things. You can see Pine Valley. You can see drone shots of Cypress Point, these legendary American clubs, but you can't see much from Seminole. So from that perspective, it was interesting to me, but you are right. It wasn't much of a TV spectacle. And the golf wasn't that good either, to be honest.
No, it's true. So Woods-Mickelson is on this weekend. I suspect lots of people will want to watch that. You know, Tiger Woods is still, when it comes to TV ratings, the alpha. My memories of the match the last time is that they spent the first fairway talking about just how cool Samuel L. Jackson was, realised that that wasn't the greatest conversation of all time, and stayed clear of each other for the next 17 holes. And it just didn't quite work. I don't know how you make these things work. You know, we were chatting in our own podcast here and saying maybe even just give them a conversation, even if it's a bit set piecey, per hole, i.e. what did you first think of me when I met you? And let's talk about that then, the first fairway. And, you know, Ryder Cup at Brookline when we played together, that can be fairway too. But I don't know, I have low enough expectations for Tiger and Phil part two here.
Yeah, they don't have much personal chemistry, no matter how hard they try.
Yeah.
The I think the template for these things, again, going back to the 60s and 70s, was there was a show called Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, which was they're all on YouTube for anybody who's interested. Some amazing stuff on there. You know, Montgomery against Mickelson, Trevino against, anyway, whatever. But they were very set piecey. And they were recorded, and they were very highly produced, and there was a bit of chat, but it was in between the golf, and it was guys chatting away or whatever. The issue here is everybody demands live sport now. And, you know, in terms of conversation, I mean, Mickelson could hold his own in any kind of company. But Tiger, you know, he's just a kind of golf guy, isn't he? So it's difficult. I think the demands of live TV makes it extremely difficult to make a good show. If you wanted to make a great show, you would go the Shell's Wonderful World of Golf route. But again, in this day and age, that doesn't work. People demand live sport. We're just going to have to. I don't have much expectation for this on Sunday. The golf might be quite good between Tiger and Phil. But great to see Tiger, because the last time we saw him, I think, was the President's Cup, and it was just the greatest display of golf. It was wonderful. So maybe he'll bring a bit of that. So I'm looking forward to that, at least.
If we chart their relationship, certainly now they talk about a chumminess and a friendship, for sure. Mickelson was out on the scene ahead of Woods. By the time, I think, Woods turned professional in 96, Mickelson had 9 wins. But then Tiger, the prodigy, wins the Masters in 97 and has I don't know how many majors by the time Phil eventually gets round to winning his major. Their relationship was not good. And even in the Armin Katayan book with Jeff Benedict, Tiger's mother would refer to Mickelson as Fat Boy or Fat Phil and ask how Fat Phil's getting on. You know, it was cold. And I guess, is the Nadir Brookline, when they're paired together by Hal Sutton as a Ryder Cup partnership and go 0-2, I think Harrington and Montgomery are one of the partnerships that they go up against. But that was like, you know, this was number 1 and 2 in the world, Phil and Tiger together, but they just did not get on.
I think it was 2004 in Detroit.
You're right, Brookline.
Harrington spoke about this recently. Actually, he.
Lawrence? Where did he do that? Oh, that's right, on the McKellar podcast. That's interesting.
But you'll know, I didn't say that.
I heard that as well. That was really good.
And it is a kind of two alpha dogs. And Harrington spoke about that. It's just impossible. It was actually a really interesting insight in how to make Ryder Cup pairings. You always have a kind of leader, you know, an alpha dog and a beta dog in your pairings. You never have two alpha dogs together because it never works. But a lot of things with Tiger, a lot of it goes back to Southern California junior golf. I mean, Phil was 5 or 6 years ahead, 4 or 5 years ahead of Tiger. I can't remember, 3 or 4, whatever. And Phil was the guy. And when Tiger was, you know, 11, Phil was the guy at 16, 17. And Tiger and the family always had their sights on Mickelson. The other one was Bob May. Bob May was the other Southern California junior golf legend. And that's how Tiger has always seen Phil. I think the prickliness always came from Tiger, because Phil's a smart guy. He's a very sociable guy. I think he would have been quite happy to have been friends with Tiger. If you look at the relationship over the years, it was always Phil who was reaching out, and it was always Tiger who was kind of prickly. I do think that, and again, mostly from Mickelson's prompting, I think Mickelson's got to Tiger in recent years over the kind of financial side of things. Hey, Tiger, you know, we've generated all this stuff. You've generated all this stuff for the PGA Tour. Why don't we get a piece of that pie just for ourselves? And I think that's where the match came from. The original one, I think they played for $10 million in Vegas at the end of last year. So I do think that the relationship has mellowed, but again, with Tiger, I think Tiger's much more chummy with the guys that he hasn't grown up with. He spoke yesterday or the other day about playing social golf with Justin Thomas, Bud Cauley, and Ricky Fowler for Thomas's recent birthday. They went out, so he kind of hangs with those guys. I don't think Mickelson has spoken recently about moving to Florida. I don't expect Tiger and Phil to be playing social golf when Phil moves to Florida. That's just the way it is, that relationship.
Yeah. Further to your point about Phil reaching out and maybe an older Tiger being more in a position to accept that, he did say recently that he said, when I was trying to deal with the nerve in my back and all those issues, and it really wasn't very good, Phil always texted me some really encouraging words.
Yeah, you hear all these kind of stories about Mickelson in that way, just private stuff. I could tell you two or three, just even with journalists. I do think he has generally got a good heart. He is, and perhaps because he's so talented, who's got the most raw talent, Tiger or Phil? You probably say they're evenly matched, maybe Tiger by a notch, but not by, you know, I think he's got 9 more majors than Phil. Yeah. And you know, what makes Phil a more sociable and more outgoing personality is probably what has denied him, you know, match or getting closer to Tiger's, you know, level. Tiger's just he's just a prickly. I don't know if you've seen much of this Jordan thing, the Jordan documentary.
Listen, we've all seen that 10 times over at this stage. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think just Tiger's just cut from that. These guys aren't they? These, you know, 3 generational talents. I mean, Tiger's not a once in a generation talent. He's a once in 50 year kind of talent. And I just think that personality trait is a part of the price that these guys have to pay. You know, as I say, I think they have, I mean, who knows with Tiger really, but I think they have mellowed in recent years. But I don't think, as I say, when Phil moves to Florida, they'll not be playing social golf. Tiger will still be playing with Ricky and JT and all those guys.
That's interesting you say that about Phil privately reaching out to different people, because I think there is, like, there has been a Shooter McGavin suspicion with Phil, because he is so, you know, Mr. Arnold Palmer type amongst the public, that could anybody be that nice?
Well, I'll tell you one story. Well, if you've got a minute, a quick story. A friend, a journalist guy, his wife got diagnosed with breast cancer about 6 months after Phil's wife, Amy, was diagnosed with breast cancer. So Phil finds this out within 2 hours. Phil, Amy's doctors are on a conference call with this guy, this journalist, and his wife. You know, the best doctors in America, you know, discussing my friend's wife's case. And lo and behold, there's loads of follow up, and it's all Phil. Another journalist I know got skin cancer. Phil, he was in the hospital for 6 weeks. Phil called him every single day. It's just stuff like that.
You're joking.
My goodness, that is, it's incredible. I mean, admittedly, they were friends.
Yeah.
But Mickelson would makes a call. My buddy covers the NFL. He's in San Diego. He's going to cover some Chargers game or whatever, and text out the blue, it's Phil. Hey, I hear you. I see you're coming to the town this weekend. Let's have a game on Saturday.
Okay.
So he's a very complicated, and then on the other hand, you just think, God, what a bumptious know-it-all. He's quite irritating. But I mean, there is this other side to Phil that is quite amazing.
Okay, very interesting. Well, it's Woods and Mickelson this time around with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. And actually, as I round this off, when McIlroy was talking about playing around, practice round with him and his dad and Tiger post-surgery, and he described it as the best golf he had ever seen, that was a little bit of a spine-tingling moment. And he knew he was going to win a major again. He knew he was coming.
Yeah, that's where Rory makes all. He lumped on quite heavily on Tiger at that point, man.
Listen, Lawrence, keep it going. Stop getting good guests. If you could, give us a chance, and we'll talk again soon. Cheers.
All the best, Joe. Take care, mate.
Cheers. Lawrence Donegan there. The McKellar podcast, by the way, well worth a listen. Really good, and they're getting some good guests of late. So that is Lawrence Donegan. We're taking a short break. Back in a minute.
The OTB Podcast Network.